If you own a small business, it's not a question of if some hacker is going to attempt to attack your company. It's a question of when. Let cyberpolicy.com keep you safe. CyberPolicy is the first end-to-end solution that combines cyber planning, security, and insurance. With CyberPolicy, your business will be protected against cyber attacks for as little as 40 cents a day. Visit cyberpolicy.com today and get a quote in just 4 minutes. CyberPolicy.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to ThinkBigRadio.com. I'm Ray Vision, your host, and you're listening to Ponder This. Ponder This is a series focusing on the art of allowing, trusting, being, and finding inner self. I'm pondering the thoughts of relationships with Chalufia Safa, creator of Women's Wisdom Circles, places where goddesses gather to heal and to transform. She is a master teacher, entrepreneur, novelist, speaker, and certified coach. Chalufia Safa's mission is to bring healing, clarity, and harmony to the world using a systematic process designed to assist women around the globe in their search for meaning and purpose. She has been published 4 times and has actually 2 books that are scheduled to be independently published. So I would like for you to join us in a conversation about relationships with Chalufia Safa. Welcome, Chalufia. How are you?
Hi, Corey. I'm doing really well. Excited about this conversation.
That's good. That's good. I am as well. Relationships is always something that we kind of live with on a daily basis. And so, you know, really, I want to dive deep and go into it. But before we actually do that, let our people know about you, a little bit about who you are, some of the books that you've written, and a little bit of background on your coaching and some of the things that you've done through life.
Sure. I am, as Corey said, Chalufia Safa, and people always say, what does your name mean? So I'm going to give you the short version. Chalufia is someone who is seeking lost answers. Safa means clarity of mind, spirit, and purpose. And those two things together sort of sum up who I am in terms of all of the aspects of my life. I've always been looking for answers, trying to gain clarity. And writing for me was really no different. I started writing because I was looking for a specific thing. I really started writing, I say, in search of an African sensibility. And by African sensibility, I mean I wanted to see images of Africans throughout the diaspora. I had this deep hunger for images in print, on stage, screen, that reflected my Africanity. I wanted to see loving black images, sensual black images, positively depicted. I wanted to see passionate, awe-inspiring black images. And I wanted to see them flying off the pages of books, and I wanted to see them in movie screens. And so in order to do that, I wanted to write these pieces that depicted my idea of African images. I'm also a retired teacher. I taught advanced placement English literature to seniors in high school, predominantly African American students. I am, as an entrepreneur, a preschool owner. I have a preschool that I have owned for almost 30 years. And I started it because I really wanted children of color, predominantly African American children, to have experiences that wealthy children were having, but I wanted them to be able to have those experiences even though their parents might not be able to afford it in the real world. And so I created a world where they could have many of those experiences. And so the preschool was had 63 youngsters, was the capacity granted us, was 63 young people. And it is in Oakland, California, still running, not at the capacity of 63 any longer, but it's still going. And I wanted those young people to have specific experiences, and I think we've been able to do that. The other business venture that I am extremely proud of is something I have created within the last 2 years called Women's Wisdom Circles, and where goddesses gather to transform and heal. And I really wanted a venue where women of every ethnicity, but also predominantly African-American women, could come and really deal with the issues that face women globally. Issues such as the pain of relationships, issues like parenting, issues in the African-American community and other communities of color, issues that divide women, such as skin color, competition for men, those kinds of things. And so I have put together a series of experiences that allow women to delve deeply into those issues and come out on the other side with some clear idea about who they are as they move into the world. So I'm very excited about that. On top of continuing to write my romance novels.
Right, which is why I have you on today. You know, it's really interesting in meeting you and understanding your mission about the books and how you're using the books as well. You know, these love stories and relationships that are they're centered around African men being heroes, is that correct?
Definitely, very definitely. I really wanted to reflect African men in a way that we don't often see. Because images, you know, images are so important. We are bombarded with them daily. And we need to harness the power of image in the things that we do as people of African descent when we talk about ourselves. And so each one of my books, the first four, deal with a continental African from somewhere on the continent. So I start in Kenya with the first book, the second one, Ethiopia, the third book, Senegal. The fourth book, I go back to Kenya. And my love stories, though they are love stories, also, I hope, tell other stories and give us pictures of African people throughout the diaspora in a very different way, because through those love stories, I'm also able to talk about strong families. I'm able to talk about some of the rituals and traditional belief systems that exist in the cultures that are the underpinnings and the foundations of who we are. So those stories allow me to do a number of things when we're talking about African people.
Well, that's great. That's great. So this is a great lead into the first question that I would like to ask you. When it comes to relationships, what is your definition?
Well, you know, I'm glad you said what is my definition, and we're going to talk about what my definition is right now, because it continues to evolve and expand. But right now, I'd say, if I had to say what is a relationship, I'd say it's a melding of hearts and minds in a way that allows for two people to appreciate one another but also allows for the struggle that comes without tearing up or causing the relationship to disintegrate. And that's a deep melding of hearts and minds in order to withstand what comes. Because contrary to romance novels and the Western idea of love, there is no such thing as wandering off into the sunset happily ever after. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm not going to say unfortunately.
Right.
Because life,
go ahead, finish that sentence and I'll ask you this.
Because life is full of experiences, as a friend of mine is often heard to say. And so with those experiences, whatever the relationship, we are going to have some struggle.
Okay. So do you think some of the stories that we were told as children, you know, the things that were in the book, especially as an author, and I don't mean to put you on the spot by saying that, are children's books, you know, creating a fantasy or an illusion? And are we putting in the minds of our children that, you know, women can have this knight in shining armor, you know, come and save them from all their problems and they'll be whisked off into bliss, and our young men have to be these strong, you know, soldier types or knights, you know, and have that ability to save that damsel in distress? Were we sold the wrong type of story based on the reality of where life really is?
Oh, for sure. Definitely we are, because we aren't told the truth about who we are as human beings. We aren't allowed to, we aren't given the opportunity to understand or told that, for example, when you are choosing a mate, we need to look for equals. And that has very little to do. We hear that, and we think it has something to do with, oh, I need to choose someone who has a kind of job that equals mine, or and it really has nothing to do with that. We're talking about equals in terms of people who have done the work of determining who they are as human beings, who have done that self-work. And we don't talk about that enough, and that is crucial and essential when you're talking about a strong relationship. Our ancestors, those Africans, those Egyptians that wrote on the temple at Luxor, know thyself. That was very important, very important. And we need to come, when we come together as people who have worked on ourselves and continue to work on ourselves, then we're talking about meeting as equals and having a better opportunity to have a strong, thriving relationship. And it doesn't mean either that you go somewhere, do some work, and you're finished.
Right.
It is a continuous process. It is, but if you are fortunate, you find someone with whom you can continually work together on yourselves and on the relationship. We are also not told that relationships are, again, contrary to popular opinion, they're not about riding off into the sunset. Relationships are reflections of ourselves. And that's so crucial that we know that. And that's all relationships, whether it's with a friend, with a child, as a parent. Relationships come into our lives to mirror pieces of ourselves that we need to see. And we do with that what we will, but That's something we often are not told. And
right.
So when we see something in someone that we find challenging, instead of running from it, saying something's wrong with that person, if we had a different perspective, maybe we would be able to look at what we see and determine how that mirrors a piece of ourselves and whether or not that can be handled so that we can use it for our good instead of our detriment.
Right, right.
So we are told some fantasy things about relationships, and we are not given, we're not told the real deal about what it is we really need to look for and where we need to be as human beings. Nobody comes, you can't fix people. You can't, that's not what it's about. That's not what it's about. It's about
exactly
you are.
Exactly. Do you think that you, based on how you grew up and what you saw as relationships, you say that you're growing and you can are continuing to grow. What do you think, because we all are growing. Growth does not stop. It doesn't really end. At least we hope that it doesn't. For some people, and some people may not be aware that they're growing. They get into relationships that are, you know, always they're finding the same type of partner or individual to get involved with, and they're not hearing. What helps you in your growth, in or in knowing or making you aware that you are growing?
Oh. First of all, I think, and I was just talking about this the other night with a group of women brought together by Diana Farr, who is indeed a visionary, bless her heart. She, and I was saying on that call that one of the things I do to make sure I am connected is my morning rituals, and I need a connection to the divine on a daily basis because I believe that that connection allows me to move into the world really being able to touch my experiences, really being able to be in the moment with the experience. So, to answer your question, I would say that life gives me almost daily episodes or instances that allow me to know whether or not I'm growing. Whether it's someone on the street who says something that is off-putting, or whether it's a conversation with my children or my grandchildren, or whether it's a conversation with friends, I know that I'm given an opportunity to examine the way I'm thinking about my life and what I'm doing with people in my life and with the experiences that come to me that I see as challenging. Those are the times in particular I'm able to know whether or not I have grown. For example, if I am able to, in a moment of what would have been deep anger, if I'm able to stop, breathe, and move on, without harboring animosity or any other feeling that is a distraction, then I know I'm growing and moving. That's how I know.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this. The second question that I want to ask you I wanted to know if you can share some of your relationship experiences, whether it's, you know, friendship or romantically or, you know, with family, especially with the opposite gender. Because, you know, we tend to, I'm not even going further with that. I just want to know if you can share some of your experience. I'll probably get into why I'm asking when it comes to the male and female relationship. Well, I guess I could say, you know, it's like I feel that that has to be built, especially in the Black community. And you're writing romance novels, you know, that involve that. So in terms of your life experience, what is it that you can share?
That's interesting, because in terms of my life experience with, I think, the romantic area of my life has been as instructive as anything. I've been fortunate in that I have been surrounded by friends, longtime friends, with whom I share conversations constantly about relationships, mine, theirs, and other people's. And we've been doing this over a period of at least 30 years with this particular group of women. And one of the things I think, or some of the things I think we've all learned, is that we really, in relationships, myself and other people, we really seem to try to fix in relationships, not consciously, but in retrospect, we seem to try to fix those things that were broken for us as children. So, if we had fathers who were missing, then we try to fix that piece. We want, and I mean missing not just physically, but sometimes fathers could have been there, but missing emotionally. And
right,
we try to fix
right.
that.
Right.
And so we try to find those partners who are going to give us those pieces that we are missing. And I'm certainly no different than anyone else in terms of trying to work that out in my life. And eventually you come to the understanding that what one can do to make life easier is to fix that, whatever that is that you may think is missing in your life. Fix it for yourself. So that, again, it comes back to that meeting your equal. So that when you enter into relationships, you're coming as a whole person, as much as one can, and not looking for someone else to complete that line in the movie, you complete me. Well, no, you don't complete me. You may compliment me. But complete me, no.
I want to say that I agree with everything that you said. And that we take our past issues into our current states if we're not growing and healing from them. And I was asking how you recognize how you heal. And that is, you say that you go through, you know, some ritual. You do meditation, you do... What are the things that you do to tap into self to understand where you are?
Oh, definitely meditation, prayer, and reading words of wisdom from many different people and cultures and traditions. That really, really helps me a great deal. And just being engulfed in silence some part of the day really helps to center me and helps me to focus in terms of as moving through the world so that I'm not so caught up in the distraction. And even when I'm in a whirlwind of things, I can tap into that moment of peace that helps to still me and helps me to move through.
Right.
I just find it invaluable.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever used these techniques or, you know, like when you're in relationships, whether they're with friends or with family, and had to center yourself, the importance of knowing your position in a relationship is also important, right? And who are you, and why is this person possibly in your life, or even why are these situations happening, whether good or bad? I mean, I'd rather all good happen, correct, right? But, you know, say that again?
I said, yes, wouldn't we all?
Right.
Like,
right.
All good all the time. That would be wonderful.
It would be. But then would we even be able to grow if it was all good, you know, and expand ourselves and our understanding. So sometimes we do actually have to appreciate some of the chaos, as long as it's not dramatic chaos, it would be nice. But, you know, how would you, for yourself, of course, because it's all about the I, you know, when you find yourself in a situation where it seems like it's kind of chaotic in a relationship, where maybe, you know, someone's not understanding you or there seems to be a little discord, how do you center yourself in those situations, or do you, you know, walk away and come back? You know, what are the type of things that you use or tools that you use to make sure that the relationship is more on the flow than it is on the ebb?
Oh, I think you definitely have to center yourself, and that can take many different forms. Walking away may be a form of centering yourself in that moment, depending upon what's going on. But for me, it's always helpful, if I can stop and say to myself, what am I to learn from this situation? Okay, Chalufia, here you are. This is the situation. What are you to learn from it? I may not get an answer immediately, but I will get an answer. It might come in a morning prayer. It might come walking down the street. But if I stop, center myself, and ask for illumination about a particular problem, it comes. And it also helps if I am not focusing my attention on what's wrong with the other person. If I'm not saying, well, what's wrong with so-and-so? Why won't so-and-so do such-and-such? Because that's really not the issue. So-and-so may be doing a lot of crazy stuff or bizarre stuff, but that's really not the issue. I'm here this time around to figure out why I'm here. And that person is in my life to reflect some of those things that I am to bring forth and work on. So I need to, it's all about asking for me, what am I to learn from this? How am I to get clear?
Gotcha. Now let me ask you this. Do you take some of this in your books, let's talk about some of your books, and what's actually in them. when you're building these romantic relationships and building these relationships in your novels, are you taking some of the inspirations from your own life and applying them there, or are these truly creative stories based on, you know, your own inner thoughts of what you want to tell?
Well, you know, I used to think that they were purely fantasy, creative pieces that just came from nowhere. But, of course, as I go back and read them and as I, which I don't, I think I've done maybe twice, I find that my belief systems are definitely there throughout all of them. And I think that's probably true of most people who write. It's rather difficult not to bring yourself to the page and make the story believable or even readable. My mentor, whose name is Vivian Stevens, and she is the African-American woman who actually is responsible for bringing the romance novel to America, not just a romance novel as we know it, but also the multicultural romance novel. She is the first African-American novel, the first Hispanic one, the first Asian one, and the first, Native American. And
yeah,
she always says, make sure you have something to say. And in order to have something to say, you've got to tap into your belief system. So I'd say that what I believe about the sacredness of the union between man and woman is all through every book. What I believe about the importance of African and African-American traditions, that runs through all of the books. What I believe about the way love is, and making love is a sacred act, that it's not a recreational activity, that runs through all of the books. So, yeah, my belief system is very definitely in every book.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. That really takes us into a whole nother realm, because romance, and I like the fact that you're saying that, you know, lovemaking. Actually, I had this conversation with a woman that I'm talking to right now, and I was saying that, you know, she had asked me if I connect with or with some, like, basically it was a very in-depth question, a very, wow, you really want to know that about the last person I was with. Did I connect with them, or was it just, you know, recreational? And, you know, I told her I'm not the type of guy that just goes and sleeps around. I kind of came into this world with a higher state of knowing. And, you know, I don't know how people do that. I can understand it. But I think we all have urges, you know. And, you know, some people fulfill those urges, you know. You know, sex can be a drug like anything else. And are we numbing our pain through sex? And so, and when you talk about romance and you're bringing that aspect of your love into relationship and the other person can't accept it, or I don't think we see or have knowledge of what real romance is. Your thoughts on that?
No, we don't. And we really don't have. I started talking to my high schoolers, seniors in high school, for example, about because they were getting ready to go off to college. I started about 3 years prior to retirement. I've been retired 2 years. I started talking to them about the sacredness of the sexual union. And we don't talk about sex in that way. We are not taught to think about it in that way. And I really believe that if we were taught to think about the sacredness of the sexual experience, we would see it and enter into it very differently, very differently. But our youngsters, our society is bombarded with sex as a drug, sex as food. It's part of the stuff that's on the menu. It's everything but what it's supposed to be. And what it is a sacred union. And that goes beyond church and religion. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the sacredness of the human body, the divinity that's in all of us. And
right.
When your divinity is connected to someone else's on that plane, there is nothing more heavenly. Dr. Joseph Binyakin used to say that heaven, he thought, was in a black woman's womb. And I thought, wow, now
right,
that's interesting.
Right.
But it is indeed, it's a sacred act, and we need to tell our children, because if our young women, for example, knew that their bodies were sacred, they would use them very differently. They would handle them very differently.
Yeah.
And it's just about, you know, it would be just very different. So, no, I think we are not told, we're not allowed to see the sex act, what it really is, what it's the miracle that it is.
Right.
Or not.
Right. Right. That's perfect. That's perfect. And our young boys, too, need to understand.
Oh, absolutely. I used to give that same lecture to young men. I would tell them, and I would tell them also very frankly, that I wanted them to think about the fact that I said, what I'd love for you to do is to wait when you get to college, or even now, wait before you enter into this sacred covenant. But you're probably not going to. So what I want you to do for me is this. Before you actually enter into the act, I want you to look deeply into that young woman's eyes and ask yourself silently the question, is this someone with whom I want to be connected for the rest of my life?
That's right. Right.
And if that answer is no, get up and go home. Because, you know, it's...
Right. Because whether you have a child or not with that person, you are connected. Every person that you have slept with, we don't... understand that intimate relationship, the exchanges of I'll just say it, fluids, right? And the exchanges of heart and soul and spirit, it lives within you. Everything you touch actually stays with you.
I would tell those young women, they're energies. You are carrying energies, other people's energies around with you. But, now, you know, I think, I'm sure some of them remembered those conversations and heard me, and what effect it had, I'll never know. But I know those were conversations that they didn't forget, because every time I had those conversations with those seniors, you could hear a pin drop in the room, because they had not been talked to in that way before. About sex. And so it's, they leave the understanding that I believe it's sacred.
Yeah. And they're processing. I think when our when our children are truly, excuse me, when our children are truly hearing us, and not just listening, but is it, which one is the deeper one? When they're listening or is it when they're hearing?
I think
digesting,
hearing. Yeah.
Right? And digesting the information, they are silent, and they're silent because they're wanting to know more. You know, it's like they, yes, we have not heard this before, and could you expound on this a little bit more? Could you, you know, give me this or that? So I love it when you can find, you know, a younger individual that wants to have these deeper conversations or just want to know. But I don't ever think, because they are sponges and we all are sponges no matter what age we are, we take in the information and it will pop up somewhere in our life. We're given so much for it to pop up in our life at a later date that, you know, that file will open and say, ah, I heard it first, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think it's, you know, it's a blessing in disguise. I'm going to give people an opportunity, if anyone is listening, the number to call in is 909-232-9222. You know, I definitely will probably bring you back again, but we do have, you know, about 9 more minutes left in the show. Give us the titles of your books.
Sure, they can go on Amazon, and the very first one is called A Foreign Affair, and it is about a Kenyan businessman. All of these gentlemen are extremely wealthy, affluent, accomplished, and know how to treat women, have deep respect for themselves and their women. And it is, he's a Kenyan businessman, and his love interest is a woman who owns her own consulting firm. That's how they meet. But that one's called A Foreign Affair. And the second one is Passionate Encounters, and it's an Ethiopian architect and an African-American interior designer. And that one's Passion Encounters. And the third one is The Art of Love, Senegalese art broker, and African-American woman who owns an art gallery. And the fourth one is Stay the Night, and a Kenyan lawyer and an African-American lawyer. And all four of the women in the first four books are their sisters. And they So you see all of these characters in all four of the books they run through because they're sisters. And so from Virginia. And they are. Yeah. So those books were fun to write.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sounds like it. Let me. When the women in the book, do they have issues that they're dealing with?
They do, but I like to say that I'm not. They are normal, everyday problems. They're not. I don't do the thug life stuff, so they're not, these are not women who are running around with drug dealers or trying to be drug dealers, and I'm not putting that down. For people who want to write that in that genre and people who want to read it, that's fine with me. I just am not there. But yes, these women have problems. One of them has been engaged, and her fiance was killed. There is one of the guys, the Ethiopian, has a son that he was kept from him. He was not told that he had the son, so that's an issue. I mean, in the Senegalese novel, the art broker's mother wants him to marry a woman that she has chosen. So, you know, there are issues, but they are normal.
So the average individual will truly be able to relate to what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the story for me that is the ultimate romance story, when I think of African people, our ancestors on the continent and here in America have left us with tremendous stories of love and tenacity and determination and bonding among Black men and women. And the story that I love most, one of them, is the story of Isis and Osiris, Egyptian god and goddess. And the idea that Osiris was killed and dismembered and parts of his body thrown all over, scattered to the four winds, and Isis set on a journey to find every piece, and she found every piece of him and took him to the god Anubis and had him restored, had his body restored. Mm-hmm. And, that to me is a metaphor for what true, strong, committed love can do for a man and a woman. Yeah. If a man is broken, if his parts are scattered to the four winds, God and his woman can restore him. Mm-hmm. And I just love that idea. And it was said by the ancient Egyptians that only her tears would breathe life into him once a year. And they saw that when the Nile rose yearly, that was Isis's tears bringing life into Osiris. Just love that idea.
Right. I kind of take it the same way. It is a beautiful. I like the way that you express it. But I will say my belief, has always been God, woman, man, and in that order, you know, woman being the nurturer and the life of all life, and that she holds the power to, you know, most people say to create empires, right? And without the woman, there would not be the community. And so I also saw that story in that way, where the power and the love of a woman it can take anything that's broken and rebuild it. You know, the tears, you know, and I heard about, you know, the Nile, how they say that, because water is a giver of life. I mean, we come from water out of the womb into air.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how many people know, but I do a lot of research, and you find that most miscarriages are boys, or male children. Right. Well, I always looked at the science of the development of the child as being, you know, they kind of enter this whole, you know, female stage first before testosterone is shot in at the third trimester to create the young man. And that chemical from the original aspect of the human being female, or the female energy, has to break herself up in order to become the man, or to create the child out of her. And so, you know, that process, when you're extracting anything from the original, you have a subset, you know, of the original. And so, you know, that's what that story, you know, also represented to me. And so, you know, we kind of, especially as men, have to really honor our women. And I think the reason why we have our broken relationships, some broken homes, is because we have been divided, from a gender standard, but also we have lessened our inner knowledge of who and what women actually are in our lives and what they play. And for the past couple of weeks, you know, I've been reading a lot of people, you know, talking about, you know, behind every great man, you know, is a woman. And that's because she is the foundation of his success. And, you know, I think we've lost that knowledge of what a queen actually is. You know, I feel once men and women come together with that knowledge, then we can stand balanced in our relationships and build these strong families. The male aspect of the ego, you know, I really feel that men were created to protect. I also look at the Adam and Eve story differently, as Eve being evolution, the evolution of life, and Adam, just like the atom in a molecule, is to protect the nucleus. And so he is the protector of the evolution of life. And if we don't protect our women, then how do we grow?
Yes.
You know, and how do we carry our legacy and build from our legacy? Because she is, you know, the life that sustains us. And so, you know, I look at all of that and state, you know, that our relationships have to be repaired in understanding who we are and what we are in our relationships.
Absolutely. All I can say is, preach, Corey. Preach.
Well, I appreciate that. We have a half a minute left of the show. I want to thank you for coming on and having this conversation. Truly got to bring you on without any technical disruptions. But I truly want to say I appreciate you being on with me today.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You take care.
Okay, you too.
Hey, it's another big day, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. We would like to thank you for your continued support and for your social media sharing of ThinkBigRadio.com. So again, thanks for sharing this show today.